This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. BP says it should know sometime today whether the so-called top kill maneuver can plug up that billowing oil from the Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf of Mexico. At a White House press conference this afternoon, President Barack Obama extended a moratorium on all new deepwater drilling for 6 months.
What's also been made clear from this disaster is that for years, the oil and gas industry has leveraged such power that they have effectively been allowed to regulate themselves. One example, under current law, the Interior Department has only 30 days to review an exploration plan submitted by an oil company. That leaves no time for the appropriate environmental review. The result is they are continually waived. And this is just one example of a law that was tailored by the industry to serve their needs instead of the public's. So Congress needs to address these issues as soon as possible, and my administration will work with them to do so.
The president also expressed sympathy for Gulf Coast residents whose lives have been disrupted by the spill.
This oil spill is an unprecedented disaster. The fact that the source of the leak is a mile under the surface, where no human being can go, has made it enormously difficult to stop. But we are relying on every resource and every idea, every expert and every bit of technology to work to stop it. We will take ideas from anywhere, but we are going to stop it. And I know that doesn't lessen the enormous sense of anger and frustration felt by people on the Gulf and so many Americans. Every day I see this leak continue, I am angry and frustrated as well. I realize that this entire response effort will continue to be filtered through the typical prism of politics, but that's not what I care about right now. What I care about right now is the containment of this disaster and the health and safety and livelihoods of our neighbors in the Gulf Coast. And for as long as it takes, I intend to use the full force of the federal government to protect our fellow citizens and the place where they live.
The images of oil-slicked marshes, beaches, and wildlife show what the spill in the Gulf looks like at ground level. But an MIT graduate student has devised a way to map the effects of the spill from the sky. He uses kites and balloons to do so. And joining us now to talk about his work is Jeffrey Warren. He went to the Chandler Islands off the coast of Louisiana to track what the spill looks like from the air. Jeff, welcome to Radio Boston. So let me just start by asking, how are these aerial photographs made?
Well, as you said, we're using kites and balloons, and we basically just attach a cheap Canon camera to them, and then we let them up on about a 1,500 feet of string we buy at Home Depot. It's all really low-tech, but the resulting pictures are, they're aerial photography that's stitched into maps. And we're just repeating this every week or so at a number of different sites around the Gulf Coast.
And so, I mean, how can you have them tied to string? Is that how you control where the balloons and the kites go to be sure that you've got enough images of the entire area you're looking to survey?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, you just don't want the balloon to get away. For example, one thing we've done is we've tied it to a kite to a boat, and we've driven the boat along the coast. And if you go around 20 miles an hour or so, you can get images periodically along that. Yeah, the camera goes off every 5 seconds, and so you can do a lot of things with that.
Okay, so in these first round of photos that you took around the Chandler Islands in Louisiana, what did you see? What did these aerial photographs reveal to you?
Well, of course you see oil. I mean, the Chandler Islands were one of the first places that were hit by the spill, but the photos are of such good resolution. They're close to like 10,000 times better than the daily NASA photos, just because, I mean, we're not getting the entire coastline, but we're focusing on a certain site at high resolution. So you can actually see birds, and you can not just see birds, you can see the species of the bird. You can see whether they're pelicans or terns. So you can see individual animals and plants. The resolution is just really, really dramatically good.
So. How long does it take you to generate the actual composite image?
It takes a little while. I think one of us working on it can do it in about 6 hours or so. Depends on the size of the area, of course, but that's, and we're getting a little behind these days, but we're getting the maps done within a day or two of the trip.
Okay. If you're getting such remarkable resolution and such detail in an area that's obviously changing so rapidly with every day, with every X millions of gallons of oil that's being pushed around, are you taking a number of surveys over time?
Yeah, we're trying to get back to the same site at least once a week and focusing on, really, highly at-risk sites environmentally or economically.
Well, let me ask you call this grassroots mapping, and why is that?
Well, the key here is that it's not necessarily me that's going out in a boat, you know, although I did it, you know, a couple times. It's actually the local people who take over and kind of take ownership of this. And in this case, it's specifically an organization called the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. It's an environmental group in New Orleans that's really taken charge of this effort. They've adopted the tools. We've provided a lot of the technical support and made sure they know how to use them. And then we take the data when they actually capture it. You know, they're actually mailing DVDs now. The local ownership is really important. So that in that sense, it is a grassroots effort, a citizen effort to map the spill.
And one last quick question for you, Jeffrey. You're going to keep these images in the public domain, I presume, mm-hmm. for anyone to look at. But also in the public domain are things like, you know, Google Maps and Google Earth, I should say. Right. So you know, what's the difference between something like what you're doing and facility like that?
Well, actually, Google's image is not in the public domain. It is under copyright, and so the uses that are governed by Google's license. Now, there is open source imagery that is available, but typically it's years old, and Google's is also years old. It's also not of as high resolution. So, I mean, there's just very, very little data out there in terms of maps that depict the spill itself, and certainly almost none of it that is as good coverage as ours. So.
Do you hope to see maybe in the coming days or weeks one of your aerial images being used as evidence or as a plaque at a congressional hearing or something about BP?
I mean, that's the point. I mean, I would hope that it would show up in Congress. You know, that would be pretty great. But I mean, our main goals are long term. That, you know, the legal process that's following this is going to take decades. The environmental recovery is going to take decades. And the kind of periodic quantitative data that we're gathering is supposed to be used on that kind of timeline.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, that's Jeffrey Warren. He's the founder of Grassroots Mapping, and we've got a slideshow of some of the amazing photographic maps he's already put together. They're on our website at wbur.org/Boston, and also a link to instructions on how you can build one of your own kite cameras. Jeffrey Warren, thank you so much.
No problem.
And if also you want to see those images, you could do that by going to a party where Jeffrey Warren will be presenting many of his photos. That event is sponsored by the Awesome Foundation. Jeffrey Warren is one of the foundation's grant recipients. And what is the Awesome Foundation, you ask? Well, Radio Boston's Tom Urell went to one of the shindigs to find out.
Should we turn on the lights on?
This is awesome.
Scared.
At a party in Central Square, a bunch of 20-somethings are about to watch a presentation of bioengineered ink. Yep, ink made out of living bacteria in fountain pens.
So the idea is to make biology to produce color. So biology.
By day, Charles Frakia is an undergrad at Imperial College in London, working this spring at a startup biotech company here in Boston. But tonight, he's the recipient of an Awesome Foundation grant. At his lab by the Boston Design Center, he puts on orange glasses and demonstrates some of the work he's been doing.
This is an example. So what I've put in there is bacteria growing on the paper. And you can see it's bright red.
It's not only bright red, but it's awesome. It's alive and glowing and not nearly as creepy as it sounds. Charles would like it to be a teaching tool for biology classes, and artists imagine art made with living ink that could continue to grow and change. Charles was able to develop the ink with a fellowship from the Awesome Foundation. The foundation has 10 trustees who each give $100 a month to a project that they decide is awesome. They pick a new project to fund from the submissions they receive through their website. Since getting started last summer, the foundation has considered some ideas that are science-based, like Charles Frakia's inks. Some ideas are utilitarian. Others are more frivolous. The foundation's first grant, a giant hammock proposed by a RISD professor, hasn't been built yet. Watch for it this summer, though. Negotiations are underway to hang the 50-foot hammock in a Boston park. November's grantee hasn't produced his project either. It's a cannon that will coat a person in cotton candy. And it will be awesome if it happens. One idea that didn't receive a grant came from someone they called Electrical Hand Guy.
He was a guy who worked as a chef for half of the year, and for the other half of the year, he toured the country doing something he called lightning shows, which basically involved like arcs of lightning from Tesla coils and stuff. And he wanted to build a Faraday cage suit that would let him walk in between the lightning. And the best feature of the suit was he wanted to create these gauntlets that would allow him to charge electricity and shoot them from his hands.
That's Tim Wong, a trustee and the guy responsible for getting the whole foundation going.
He's awesome, certainly, but it's also a huge insurance liability.
As they sort through ideas for projects to fund, the trustees are looking only for something that strikes them as awesome. They don't ask for a financial return on their investment, and they don't even require that you finish the project. Again, Tim Wong.
Basically, the idea is that we don't claim any ownership over the idea, we don't claim any ownership over the project, but we do derive a substantial amount of joy in making a project that we thought was really cool turn into a real project.
The foundation trustees see their grant as a way to fund ideas that otherwise couldn't get funding. The project might just be too small or too weird to even be considered for a conventional grant. For trustee Keith Hopper, it's really important that the Awesome Foundation isn't driven by ideology.
Traditional foundations also have very specific requirements, make you jump through some very specific hoops, and potentially change your idea to meet the requirements and needs of the foundation. So the thought of allowing someone to be inspired by their own idea and not have to acquiesce to another's requirements is an important part.
Though they're reluctant to define awesomeness, the foundation trustees are pretty sure they know it when they see it. So each month, the foundation meets up for an awesome party, like the one in Central Square where Charles Frakia debuted his inks. The grantee from the previous month presents what they've done, and the new awesome project is announced. That's enough for trustee Erhard Grafe, who's happy just to get a chance to be exposed to new ideas.
That's another highlight. I mean, after we get to read through all these awesome ideas that are submitted to us, then we get to go hang out with a bunch of awesome people with awesome ideas in person at these parties. You know, it's inspiring every time I get to open up the list of submissions or go to one of these parties and start talking to the people that attend.
Hopefully next week or something I'll get some DNA so that we'll actually produce real color.
Well, that is truly awesome.
Thank you.
That report from Radio Boston's Tom Urell. Joining me now in the studio is Tim Wong. He's the founding trustee of the Awesome Foundation. Welcome, Radio Boston, Tim.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let me just ask you briefly, how did all this awesomeness get started?
Well, at the time when we were originally talking about starting the Awesome Foundation, I knew a couple people who were applying for conventional grants. And they started out really excited. They were like, oh man, I'm going to get this fellowship to go to Europe and work on this project, and it's just going to be great. But pretty soon I saw them, you know, a month later, and they were incredibly depressed. And I was like, oh, well, what's the matter? And they said, well, you know, I kind of had to force my idea to fit the grant. And now I don't like it. And they awarded me the grant, but now they have to see where I'm putting the money in every single cent. They want to see where every single cent goes. And it was terrible. They actually were really unhappy that they had gotten the award. So the idea of the Awesome Foundation was a little bit of a response to that, right? The question is, could we create a nice, fast, lightweight organization to fund projects? And we can be completely honest about it. You could say, I just want to do this because I'm really excited about it. And I think that's actually the most important thing.
So the grants are, I guess, they're $1,000 each?
Yeah, they're $1,000 each.
But people are contributing $100 each towards the grant.
Right, okay. Right. Each of the chapters has 10 people who will put that together. And we'll give the money in any form. So cash, check, gold doubloons, you know, that sort of thing, if they're interested. No one's requested that just yet, but I'm sure it'll happen at some point.
So at $1,000, I mean, that's kind of even smaller than micro in terms of the grant world. It feels like a nano grant. So what kind of projects are qualifying as awesome that are benefiting from these $1,000 grants?
Sure. You know, there's a funny kind of irony within the grant world where it seems to be there's a lot of opportunities to get $10,000. There's even some really publicized opportunities to get $100,000 or even $1 million. But it's actually really difficult to get someone to give you $1,000. It's enough to be important, but so little that most conventional foundations actually don't even see the reason why they should fund that sort of thing. But it's kind of amazing what happens when you give $1,000. You meet a lot of people who are really stretching the value of a dollar a really long way. So Jeff's project certainly is a great example of that, where each one of these cameras are coming up at, you know, $100 a piece. And so a $1,000 grant is suddenly a huge boost to that kind of project.
So tell us a little bit about the May recipient of the Awesome Foundation grant.
Definitely. So we just announced this today. It's very exciting. A man in Melbourne who is mostly known for the creation of a shoe phone is actually turning his efforts to creating a new project, which is P2P phones. So the idea is, in the event of an emergency, in the event of a disaster, your cell phones are all down because the infrastructure is down. And he's working with these little units that allow you to create your own phone network, really. And so the idea is, in the event of a disaster, you'd spread a lot of these units around a city, for example, and people would continue to be able to communicate with the outside world, which is incredibly, incredibly important. And what's amazing is that these units are designed to be extremely low cost, extremely simple to set up, and extremely easy to use. And so it's another case in which $1,000 actually goes a long way to making these projects happen.
Wow, and given the recent disaster, say, in Haiti, truly an awesome idea for P2P cell phones. Thank you, Tim Wong. You're the founder of the Awesome Foundation. We also hope to be able to have you back in the future to talk about other ideas. And listeners, if you've got an idea that you want to submit for an awesome grant, you can go to our webpage, wbur.org/Boston. There's a link there to the Awesome Foundation page. You've got another option now, and that's our listener line. Give us a call at 617-353-1137. That's 617-353-1137. Drop us an awesome idea, rants, raves about the show, anything you want to talk about on Radio Boston. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow at 3 for more Radio Boston.